Welcome to today's Journal Club webinar. My name is Rachel Dager. I'm the Executive Director of SNEB and glad you're joining us for the presentation today. Just a reminder, the Journal Club this fall semester is celebrating the FAO's International Year of Fruits and Vegetables. So we have authors from the Journal of Nutrition Education and Behavior sharing their research with us. Research that's obviously focused on fruit and vegetable intake. The Fall Journal Club series is sponsored by Elsevier, who is JNEB's publisher. So if you're not a member of SNEB and you're attending, we are glad to have you with us today. So a little bit of housekeeping. If you go and look in the GoToWebinar toolbar, you'll see the handout, the slides for today's presentation. So please download those and follow along. We will take questions at the end of the webinar. Please type those in the question block and we will moderate those to our presenters. There'll be a short survey when I close the webinar. We appreciate your feedback on this session as well as ideas for future journal clubs. And then watch for an email later this week that'll include a link with the recording, the handout, and the CEU certificate that you're earning through your attendance. So I will turn things over to our moderator. Dr. Kristen DiFilippo is Assistant Professor at the University of Illinois.
Thanks, Rachel. Today I get to introduce our speakers. We have Dr. Barossi, who earned a PhD in health behavior from Indiana University, Bloomington, a master's and a bachelor's with honors in nutritional sciences from the University of Mauritius. She previously worked as a research associate and postdoctoral fellow at Rutgers Cancer Institute in New Jersey. Dr. Barossi is a behavioral scientist with a focus on nutrition. Much of her research studies the effectiveness of theory-based strategies that can be integrated into digital interventions to improve dietary behaviors of underserved individuals with the active involvement of community stakeholders. Dr. DeBarossi's research has been funded by both internal and external grant awards. Dr. Krishna Thiagaraja is a senior lecturer in nutrition at the Department of Applied Health Sciences in the School of Public Health at Indiana University. Her background is in community and international nutrition and nutrition and health problems among college students and adults. I want to thank them both for joining us today and sharing their expertise with us. At this point, I can pass it over to our presenters.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to our presentation. I'm very excited to be here today, and I have my co-author, Dr. Krishna Thiagaraja, joining me. My name is Dr. Trishni Barossi, and I'm assistant professor at Indiana University. I'm an assistant professor at Hofstra University. As Kristen said, I did my PhD at Indiana University, and today our presentation is going to be on a randomized mHealth trial to promote vegetable intake through counting and goal setting. To continue, we have no conflicts of interest to disclose. I want to mention that this study was funded by the Women in High Tech organization, which was a grant awarded to me when I was doing my doctoral dissertation study at Indiana University, and also research funds that was granted to Dr. Susan Middlestadt, who's also one of the co-authors on this paper. And she wasn't able to be here today, but however, she's one of the co-authors on this paper. Now, Krishna will talk a bit about the nutrition educator competencies.
Yeah, this presentation covers the theme area of nutrition educator competency, number 7, behavior and education theory. Mainly focus on describing the major psychological theories of behavior and behavior change and apply them to eating behavior and behavior change. And the second nutrition educator competency is number 8, that is nutrition education program design, implementation, and evaluation. And specifically, it is focusing on select the appropriate theoretical models or frameworks and the next one, please. Design or select theory-based behavior change strategies or techniques that would be effective in achieving the objectives and are appropriate for diverse audience. Almost 90% of the US population does not meet the recommendation for vegetables. And in addition to that, the US population does not meet intake recommendation for any of the vegetable subgroup. So therefore, the purpose of this study is to test whether the self-monitoring through counting and goal setting lead to an increase in red and orange vegetable intake in undergrad students. So if you look at the undergrad students before enrolling or before coming to the universities, they are actually depending on their parents or the caregivers. So their dietary intake is partly influenced by them. But when they move to the universities, they are responsible for their dietary behaviors. So therefore, it is an ideal setting to start intervention or improving the nutrition intake. So Indiana University is one of the Big Ten universities, and also students, those who live in the dormitories, are ideal population, because most of those students live in the dormitories. They also have their meals from the dining halls. And also the dining halls, they provide red and orange vegetables. So therefore, they have easy access to the red and orange vegetables, and also at the same time, control group also exposed to the same environment. So if you look at the dietary guidelines, that recommends around like 5.5 cups equivalents of red and orange vegetables per week, or 0.8 cup per day red and orange vegetables. So the young adults, only less than 5%, they consume recommended levels of fruits and vegetables. And especially among adolescents, they are not meeting the red and orange vegetable consumption. So therefore, it is really good to do the intervention on red and orange vegetable consumption among college students. And also, as I mentioned earlier, because it is important to change their college students, undergrad students' behavior, so when they were moved out, so they can continue to have the healthy behaviors. Tishni, you can go ahead. Yeah.
Thank you, Krisha. So all of you might be wondering, or at least some of you might be wondering, why red and orange vegetables? Why did we focus on this specific part of a diet instead of maybe of a subgroup of vegetables or even of a dietary behaviors? There were several reasons why we picked red and orange vegetables. As Krisha mentioned, it's very nutritious. It's packed with different nutrients such as carotene, vitamin A, and so on. And the other reason also is that it's actually one of the most under-consumed vegetable subgroups, even among adolescents. And the other reason that we wanted to focus on this specific vegetable subgroup is because it's something very specific that the undergraduate students could focus on, instead of telling them to go and change your overall diet or just improve your vegetable consumption. And many times, undergraduate students maybe they would be confused or even wondering, what do you want me to do in order for me to improve my vegetable consumptions or even my diet quality? So giving them something very specific to focus on is actually helping them to shift their attention on doing one change at a time. The other reason why we also focus on this vegetable subgroup was it was available through different options in the dining halls. So when I started doing this study in my initial stages of when I was working on this study, I did observation of a dining environment and also on the dining halls, and also talked to different students, talked to the dining staff services, and so on. And I found that red and orange vegetables were actually offered in different options to students, whether it was through soups or salads or even in terms of snacks. They were Indiana University Bloomington was trying to revamp offerings in terms of having more nutritious items for students. So this was something that students would not have difficulty if they went and looked for these type of vegetables to eat. The other reason also is compared to some other vegetable subgroups, such as maybe dark leafy green, this subgroup provides a lot of options for students to choose from. As you can see from the photos here, we can have tomatoes to choose from, we can eat carrots, or we can switch to baked sweet potatoes. We can also switch to different types of bell peppers, such as orange, red, or even yellow bell peppers, which are in this category. So before I continue, I want to mention that the study protocol of this study was registered on clinicaltrials.gov. And to give you an idea of what we were thinking of doing in this study was our objective was to promote health of this population, of this priority group that we were focusing on. And one way to promote health was to improve the total vegetable consumption. And like I mentioned, it can be difficult for people to really know what they need to change in terms of their vegetable consumption. So we told them to eat more of red and orange vegetables for several other reasons that I just mentioned to you. And we wanted to also change their beliefs and their intention towards eating more of these red and orange vegetables. And how were we going to do that? This is where the behavior change techniques or strategies come into place. And we specifically used two behavior change techniques, one of which was self-monitoring of behavior, followed by goal setting. And this study took place over 3 days. So this was a brief experiment. You could say that this is a brief experiment or a rapid test of these behavior change techniques. To give you an idea of self-monitoring, you might have heard of this term before. It's a behavior change technique or a strategy which can help individuals to track their own behavior and to also get feedback or even search for new strategies while they are trying to attain a goal or trying to change a specific behavior, which in this study we were doing. And the way we operationalized self-monitoring in this study was counting the number of times they were eating any red and orange vegetables. And you can see here we are focusing on count, on a frequency, instead of asking them to monitor their diet through maybe cups or servings. And with different lay people, you know, they don't understand what is a serving, for instance, or how do you even measure a cup. And it can be burdensome on them. On the contrary, with a frequency or just counting the number of times, that is more intuitive and that is more convenient and easy, especially for this group of population that we are focusing on. They are running from class to class. They don't have time to really sit down and then measure how much red and orange vegetables did I eat today. So if we tell them to just count the frequency, that's very easy for them to have an estimate about how many times we ate these red and orange vegetables. And so it's very easy for them to keep track of that over time. And the second behavior change technique that we use was from the goal setting theory. And you might have heard of SMART goals, SMART meaning something that is specific, something that is measurable, something that is also achievable or attainable, but at the same time, it can also be somewhat challenging for them to do that. And we want also that behavior or that goal to be rewarding also for the population that you're trying to make them do that behavior. And then the T stands for time relevant or proximal goal. And like I mentioned, over 3 days, this is something that it's a very immediate behavior that is happening. And it's happening through a short period of time instead of trying to make them change that behavior over a long time. And with goal setting, it's a process where it includes helping people establishing a SMART goal or a specific, measurable, challenging, yet achievable goal. And for this study, we choose to have the goal of eating more of red and orange vegetables as a SMART goal. So this idea of having something very specific, measurable, as well ties in with one of the theories that we picked for this study. And to give you a demonstration of how the self-monitoring and then the goal setting took place, I will come in a bit to talk about how the students use smartphones, essentially when they try to self-monitor the intake of red and orange vegetables, a counting checklist appeared in front of them on their smartphone, and the counting checklist showed to them how many times did you eat any of these items. And then they had to go through the list and then check off, oh, I ate carrot one time, or I ate tomatoes one time, or any of these items that they ate, they just had to click on it and then it would give them a total count. And then from there on, if let's say they ate zero time or one time, based on that count for that day that they got, they had to complete a goal. They had to set the goal. So this is where the goal setting took place. And they set a goal of eating red and orange vegetables two times tomorrow, if let's say their count was one time for that day. And this is, the smartphones was the use of smartphones was really interesting in this study. One thing I need to say is that I see a lot of people very excited to use their smartphones to take photos of everything that they eat. I'm sure some of you here that are attending the webinar, at some point you must have used your smartphone to take photos of what you're eating, and then you go back in your phone folder, and then you might have seen like, oh, last month I ate this thing that I took a photo of, and it helps you to remember something. So the mobile technology in this study really, it helped the undergraduate students to use their smartphones to take photos of what they were eating every day. So we send them reminders throughout the day, in the morning, in the afternoon, and then in the evening. Those reminders were timed to go to the students' phones. And then it kept reminding them, please keep taking photos of what you're eating today. And so the students were taking photos of everything that we were eating, even beverages and so on. And they also use the smartphones to access the online platform to upload photos and to count their daily frequency of vegetable intake. So not only the smartphones allowed them to keep track of what they were eating, but also it was a tool that they used to access the online platform where they were uploading everything that we had in terms of their photos, and also to keep track of what we were eating. And this is how it appeared essentially to the students. This is a screenshot. So once they accessed the online platform, it told them to just upload the photos of what they took for that day and where, what is the name of the food, the amount of each of its main ingredients. We didn't make this very strict. We told them to estimate the amount that they were eating, even if they could not get a precise amount, but try to get close to the amount that you were eating. And students did pretty good on that, I must say. And the third thing that we asked them is to tell us the location where we acquired the food of a meal, whether it was a specific dining hall, or maybe they got it from outside campus as well. And then we had to count again. So this is the counting checklist. And then we had to pick a number of how many times we ate of any of these items. And then again, this is the goal setting part here where we had to set a goal of how many times we ate it. So like I mentioned again, if most of the students started with zero or one, so depending on what were their count, we had to set a goal to eat one more time the next day. And this is a flow diagram that shows how many people got started into or were interested in participating in the study and were assessed for eligibility. And by the end of the study, how many people did participate in the study? At first, we had 296 students who were assessed for eligibility, and then we excluded some of them because we didn't complete some of the preliminary questionnaire or part of it. And then from those who completed the preliminary questionnaire, we excluded 7 out of them because we had double entries. And then we had 281 students whom we randomized. And from the 281, we excluded 116 further because some of them didn't upload photos or descriptions on any days, or some of them uploaded photos on only one day, or some of them did it for only 2 days. So at the end of a study, we included only those students who uploaded photos and or descriptions on all the 3 days. So in total, we had 85 students in the experimental group, and then we had 80 students in the control group. And to give you an estimate of how much out of the 281, how many people completed everything, it's just over half, which is about 58.7% of all participants participated fully in all of 3 days, meaning they completed the preliminary questionnaire, they did everything that we asked them for each of the 3 days that the trial was running. And then we have some of the characteristics of the participants here. This shows some of the baseline characteristics. And you can see that almost half of the students were aged 19 years old. So it's a pretty young group. And 64% of participants also reported to be white. And most of them also identified as female. This slide here shows you the raw data. I call this raw data because these are photos provided by participants. And we have not modified any of these photos in any way. This is how the description appeared, and this is how the photos also appeared. You can see that you can kind of see also in the background in what context maybe the photo was taken, like maybe at the desk or in their living room and so on, could make guesses. But what I want you to focus on in this slide is these are photos and descriptions provided by the control group. So this is the group that were not asked to track their red and orange vegetable intake and set a goal. And this group just uploaded photos of what they were eating on 3 days without doing the behavior change strategies applied to them. And you can see on the left side here, this is pop cereal that they were eating, about 1.5 cup of cereal with milk, and they were eating it from their dorm. And the second picture, it's a healthy item. It's fruits, it's blackberries. So they were eating about 6 ounces of blackberries. And the third one on the right is a slice of pizza. There is some tomatoes on that slice, but it's not very much. And it's, as you can see, in general, even if some items you might think of it as healthy, it's overall, it's not that the diet quality is not that high compared to the other group, which I'll show you in a second. So these are the sample photos and descriptions provided by the experimental group. In the left side here, you can see someone was eating some carrots, some leafy greens, and some cucumber slices with some chickpeas or garbanzo beans. And then next to it, there is pasta with, you can really see the chunks of tomatoes in the pasta here. So I put those in red here to notice which are the red and orange veggies. And then the middle photo is someone was eating baby carrots, which they got outside of a dining hall. And then the last picture here on the right, you can see that someone was eating rice and beans and also some tomatoes and some lettuce shreds and some chicken. And if you see this these photos provided by the experimental group, you might notice that in addition to eating, let's say, carrots, they were also eating some leafy greens, some beans, and they were also eating some rice, which in my opinion is a much better diet, but in general, students tend to eat less healthier than these items. Although we didn't assess it in our study, but we did see a trend whereby when they were trying to improve one part of their diet, it also trickled down to improving other parts of their diet as well. And how did we measure the outcome? So the researchers had to come up with a way to measure the frequency or the behavior that was happening over 3 days. And the way with which we came to measure that was assessing the frequency of red and orange vegetable intake, which was based on estimates by independent raters. And we used the photographs and descriptions that were uploaded by each participant to do that. So essentially, we did a two-stage coding process. And in the first stage, we trained two raters. We had a training protocol, and we provided them with some random photos and descriptions. And we asked them to, based on the training protocol, to try to estimate the count of each of these photos and descriptions for each participant. And then when we felt very comfortable with measuring the count for each of these photos and descriptions, we then provided them with the photos and descriptions that they were blinded to. So the raters didn't know which group was which. So we didn't know whether this photo is from the experimental group or this photo is from the control group. And then we also calculated inter-rater reliability. And then in the second phase, there was some disagreement between some of the pictures and descriptions. So for those photos and descriptions that were disagreement, we had another two coders that also estimated the count for each of those photos and descriptions that had disagreement on. And at the end, we had inter-rater reliability of 1.0, which demonstrated perfect agreement. And one thing that I people keep asking me is, did you measure ketchup? My answer is no. We didn't measure ketchup. It wasn't included in the count because it's processed, and it's we were looking at something that was included as a fresh item, or even something that, you know, even if we were using canned tomatoes, but you could actually see the veggies in the items. And to give you an idea for the count, let's say if we go back to these pictures here for the experimental group. So for this one, the count would be 2 because we were eating carrots and then tomato. And then here the count would be 1. We were eating only carrots. And then here the count is also 1 because we were eating tomatoes together with some other items such as rice and beans, which don't count into the vegetable subgroup that we were looking at. But if you look at the item here, only tomatoes were present but fit with red and orange vegetables. And to assess our main research question, we use the generalized estimating equations, which is a statistical test that provides more efficient and unbiased regression parameters. And especially useful as it can really account for within participant correlation of responses, which was happening in this study. So we assessed whether there was a change in the behavior, which is the amount of times the red and orange vegetables were consumed over time, comparing participants in the experimental group to those in the control group. And we did see a change from the first day to the second day, and also from the second day to the third day. As you can see, for the experimental group, there was the higher increase was noted from the first day to the second day. And then from the second day to the third day, their consumption remained almost constant with a slight decrease. While for the control group, it remained almost the same. So this is the group that didn't apply the behavior change techniques, and they had no idea about self-monitoring or even goal setting. Now, Krisha will talk a bit about some of the limitations of this study and what could be done moving forward.
Thanks, Trishni. In our study, we used convenient sample. So because of that, actually mostly those who are concerned about their health or they wanted to improve their health, they will enroll in the study. So that might be a limitation. And also most of our study participants were white and also female students. So therefore, generalizing to the everyone, it is very difficult. And the second limitation was this study was brief because only we conducted for 3 days and we don't know the maintenance, how it's changed over the time. So that is another limitation with this study. And also in this study, we actually collected the data how they are actually consuming the vegetables based on the photographs. So the missing photographs and also sometimes the poor quality of some photographs of meals. So that actually hinder the accuracy of the measurement. So therefore, that might be another limitation in this study. And also another important thing, maybe students would have took those photographs and uploaded it, but at the same time, they actually wouldn't have eaten those food items. So that is also another limitation we found in this study. Next slide, please. Yeah, in this study, the mobile photograph method for self-monitoring coupled with a goal setting has the potential for behavior change among individuals who do not have expertise in nutrition and also those who have poor literacy. So they can also use these methods to enhance their vegetable intake. And also this study methodology and outcome can be applied to designing a better app that can integrate health behavior theories like goal setting theories into it. So that might be another implication with this study. And also future research need to be done on developing a follow-up study, whether this intervention is sustainable, because we have seen from day one to day two, there is an increase. And day three, little bit slightly decreased, but not significant. But we wanted to know it is actually sustainable over the time. So that is another thing. And also, additional research is needed to identify how often to increase goals to improve vegetable consumption. And also, in addition to that, we have observed increasing red and orange vegetable consumption improved slightly other group of food intake too. So the future studies must focus on not just fruits and not just vegetables or maybe overall diet quality too. Thanks, Trishni.
Thank you, Krisha. And for now moving forward to one of our next step from this overall project, but we did, we collected additional data in addition to what we presented here today. And one thing, but as Krisha mentioned, we didn't directly observe their long-term behavior. So what happened after we did this trial, but we did assess the beliefs and intention of continuing to do this behavior even at the end of trial. And to do this, we used the reason action approach to look at whether we would intend to continue doing this behavior over long term. And this is our next step from this project that we are currently working on, and we are planning to write a manuscript on very shortly. And we thank you so much for your attention and for giving your time and being here today with us and learning more about what we did regarding this study. And if you have any questions or comments or even want to get in touch with us after this webinar, we would be very excited to hear from you. And I have my own contact information here, my email address, and also that of Dr. Tyagaraja if you want to get in touch with us. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for sharing. If anyone has any questions, they can put those into the questions box. So one question I had, as you were explaining the flow of participants through, a number of participants did not complete the study. Were you able to assess characteristics of the people who did not complete? And if you were, did anything stand out about the students who did not complete all 3 days versus those who did?
That's an excellent question. We did assess whether there were differences between those who completed the intervention and those who didn't participate in the study. And we found two main differences. One of them is female participants were more likely to be part of a study. And then we also found something very interesting. Those who were consuming less of dark green vegetables, those students were more likely to participate in this intervention. So it could be that they might already have an idea that I'm not eating enough of veggies. And, you know, many times when you think of veggies, dark leafy green veggies come in mind in terms of people's when they think of whether I'm eating enough of veggies. So that could have made them think like, oh, there is a study going on. Maybe that could help me improve my vegetable intake. So we did find that female participants and those who were eating less of dark green leafy vegetables were those participants more likely to be part of this study.
Okay, that's really interesting to hear. Someone asked, do you know what consuming the red and orange vegetables replaced? For example, was it other veggies or was it more processed foods or meats?
It was more of red and orange veggies, and we didn't see too much of processed items. Could you please elaborate on the question?
So I guess I'll combine this with a question I had. So I wasn't 100% clear. Was your day one a baseline, or were they starting the intervention already on day one when they reported their intake?
Yes, thank you for asking us this question. So the first day was when we started doing the self-monitoring and goal setting. But before the first day, there was another day where we completed a preliminary questionnaire. So in total, you could say that the study took place more than 3 days, but essentially the trial was run for those 3 days where we were asked to apply those behavior change techniques.
Yeah, so did that baseline survey, did that include intake of red and orange?
Yes, we asked them a few questions about their dietary consumption, but also one thing that we were talking about in our research group is we didn't want them to, one of the things that we were thinking to not ask them too many questions because we didn't want it to be burdensome on them as well and not to lose people in the initial, but we did assess dark leafy green veggies and what were their consumption of red and orange vegetables. And those other items like meat and stuff, we didn't ask them, unfortunately, but that would have been a great question to also ask.
Okay, so I think that's what that question was getting at, is do you know what happened to the rest of the diet?
Okay. Yeah, that would be, I think that's one of the things that I think from the photos, you know, you can do a visual inspection, so that could be another interesting way of looking at this rich data that we have through the photos on how other parts of a diet change. And in the photos that I showed to you, you can kind of see that there were other things happening in addition to improving red and orange vegetable consumption. And I'm planning to, you know, we've researched, sometimes it takes longer time than you anticipate, but that's one of the things that I'm really excited to dive into when I get time to really assess what was happening to other parts of the diet based on an examination or visual inspection of these photos one by one for each participant.
And then another person joining us said, it's an interesting presentation and thank you. Did you do a power calculation on how many participants you needed for the intervention?
Yes, we did do a power calculation. And we found that we needed around 150 participants to get at least a power of 0.8. So we were within the range here with 165 people in the total who completed all stages of a study. It's not a big sample size, but it was enough for us to just see how the rapid test of the change processes took place over time.
And then someone asked, how burdensome was it to review the photos and extract the data from them?
It was time consuming. I'm gonna be honest about that. It was quite time consuming because we had to train the raters, and before that, me and Dr. Middlestad, who's one of the other co-authors on this paper, we had to come up with a training protocol and test it out, and then we had to hire two people who had expertise in nutrition and then train them and then make sure that they were understanding each of a step. And then, like I mentioned, there were disagreements at some point as well. So then we had to hire another two raters that look at the photos and descriptions in which there were disagreements. So it took us quite a while, but we also wanted to make sure that we had a set of procedures that we could use if we have to do a similar study in future, or even if other researchers came to us and asked us, how did you really assess the count for each of these photos? So then we would be able to tell you that this is how we did it, and these are the different stages that we went through to actually get to where we wanted to be.
Yeah. And another question, was health status an inclusion factor?
No, actually.
I didn't. Do you mean that was health status as an inclusion criteria?
Mm-hmm.
No, we didn't include health status as an inclusion criteria when we were recruiting for participants. Our inclusion criteria were you had to have access to a smartphone, you had to be an undergraduate student living in a dorm, and you didn't have to be already part of a prior nutrition trial. So those were the main criteria, and you had to be 18 or above of ages.
Okay. Yeah, thank you. So thank you so much for sharing with us today. It's been great to hear about your research and the work that you did with these undergraduate students. At this point, I think I can pass it back to Rachel.
Thank you. I was going to ask you, when we were talking before the webinar, you mentioned that you found that an app was too expensive for this project. How do you think an app might have changed the research?
That's a very good question. I think it's hard for me to really imagine how an app would have changed it, but I think it might have been more fun for some people in the study to have to engage with an app versus something that looked like an online platform and we had to upload. And I think with an app, you can be more engaging and make it sound more fun for them to do that, especially if we were trying to do it over long term, right? So that could build it into engagement and also have different things like the reminders. We, as the researchers, we had to send them reminders throughout the day. While with an app, there would be less of that burden on the researchers and more of those kind of stages that we had integrated within the study. We could have program it through the app to go to the participants and you know, that would have been more engaging for us as well to see how that would work. But that's a great question. I might have to give that some more thoughts about how an app would have worked in better ways or in more efficient ways, or even maybe we would have gotten problems with an app as well, but that's a great question.
Yeah, thank you for sharing. Well, and thank you for presenting your research today. Just a reminder that when I close the webinar, there's a short survey. We appreciate your feedback on this session as well as idea for future sessions. And then watch for an email later this week with a link to the recording, the handout, and the CEU certificate. And then just a reminder that next Monday's Journal Club is at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. Our presenter is in Singapore, so we are adjusting the timing. But as always, if you register for the Journal Club and aren't able to attend live, we will send you the follow-up. So, and then all the journal clubs and other SNEB webinars are up on the website. So encourage you to go and check those out. So look forward to seeing you next Monday. Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks.